The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And against all odds, we made it. We made it. Well, most of us did. To the end of 2020. I know officially it doesn't end until tomorrow night. But I know. Hold on to your seats. I'm actually taking tomorrow off. For a few reasons. One is it's our wedding anniversary. We got married on New Year's Eve 5 years ago tomorrow. I was a late bloomer. I thought rather than work myself to the bone, which is what I do anyway, because it's what I do. I've been filling in for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen this week as well. So I've got one more show for them tonight. And then tomorrow, it's the last day of the year. My deductible for my health insurance is paid. And actually, I hit the out-of-pocket maximum for the year. So right now, everything is paid for at 100%. So, I'm a lung cancer survivor. And in August will mark 5 years since my surgery. If I have clean CAT scans between now and then, once you hit 5 years, they tell you you're cured. It's the only time they use the C word, the cure word, when dealing with cancer. So I have two more CAT scans to get. My appointment with the oncologist is the middle of January, and I thought, you know what, if I can get the CAT scan in before the end of the year, that's going to save me a few $100. So I love my oncologist. They got the clearance through the insurance company, so I'm getting my CAT scan tomorrow and also getting blood work tomorrow for my primary care doctor appointment that comes in the middle of January as well, because then I don't have to pay a copay. And how much does it suck that we have to think along those lines? It's just unconscionable that here we are, the wealthiest nation on the planet, and we are like nickel and diming our healthcare choices, our healthcare decisions. I'm saying the last day of the year, our wedding anniversary, I'm going to be running around going to Quest to get blood drawn, then going to the oncologist to get the CAT scan, so that it doesn't cost me many hundreds of dollars if I waited an additional day. It's nonsensical, but it is what it is. This is reality. Until we can get Medicare for all, this is the system we're stuck with. And I'm only 61, so I still have 4 years to wait for Medicare. Not that Medicare these days is any great shakes either, because unless you can afford the actual real, Medicare supplemental without having to go for the Medicare Advantage, where the insurance companies basically still have the right to deny you services that your doctors say you need. We've gone over this so many times, and we'll continue to do so as we continue to, advocate for Medicare for all. And again, I've got to give a shout out to Bernie Sanders. Right now, the Senate went back in session 2 hours ago. Right now they're doing they're having a quorum call, calling all the senators to the floor to mark their attendance as they ostensibly in a few minutes begin debating the National Defense Authorization Act veto override vote. Now, the question is, what's going to happen with that? So they're taking attendance now. So here's what happened. Yesterday you had McTurtle McConnell object, and it happened again today. They gaveled back into session this afternoon, just 2 hours ago. Why they waited until 3 o'clock in the afternoon is beyond me. But then again, I don't understand half of what they do because it makes no sense. However, they did. And once again, Mitch McConnell threw up his objections. Chuck Schumer tried to get them to agree to a vote tomorrow, I think at 12:30 is what they said. And, you know, they go through the whole rigmarole with, you know, and we'll vote and it'll be laid on the table and we'll say it'll have been read three times. And, you know, and then click your heels together and say there's no place like home. And voila, we're done. But then you hear that McConnell voice.
I object. And he does it with the you got to get the voice down. You have to, you know, not move your upper lip. And it's like, this is Mitch McConnell. I object.
Ugh. So basically, Mitch McConnell is still saying he will not bring to the floor the bill, the Cash Act that the House just passed 2 days ago, that would increase the amount of payment to individuals like you and me up to $2,000 from the $600 amount that's allocated in the bill that Trump finally signed on Sunday night. So I don't know what's going to happen when they finish this quorum call, when they finish taking attendance. Maybe we'll, you know, I've got it. I'm monitoring it in the background. They're still taking attention. Mark Kelly, I guess this is his first roll call. So they're still doing that. And then I'm going to try to go back to it to see what comes next. The question is, will Bernie Sanders, along with Chuck Schumer, who is side by side with him on this one, that Chuck Schumer couldn't have been more ebullient in his praise of Bernie at the beginning of today's session. Ed Markey, who's right there with Bernie on this. Sherrod Brown spoke a few minutes ago. But I wonder where the rest of the Democrats are. Why aren't they all over this? But once again, Bernie Sanders has our back, and I'm forever grateful to him. I really am. So I'll keep an eye on that. Let me tell you a couple of other programming notes. So I am taking off tomorrow and Friday. So there won't be a live show, but there will be new shows. So one of the things that I love, I told you I wasn't going to do a year-end show this year because the last thing I wanted to do was look back on the year 2020. Because what a shit show this has been. I mean, literally, I think the worst year of our collective lives. But other people have done some year-end brilliance. And one that I look forward to every year is one of the few things that I commend South Florida for. The Miami Herald has three great columnists. The paper sucks, and the South Florida Sun Sentinel is even worse. But we subscribe to the Miami Herald mostly because they have Leonard Pitts, who's brilliant, Carl Hiaasen, who has always been one of my favorite authors, one of my favorite fiction authors. Well, he has been a Miami Herald columnist for many years, and he's spot on with the politics, and he's hysterically funny. And then there's Dave Barry, and Dave Barry is a humorist, a Miamian, a writer, an author, and a columnist for the Miami Herald. And every year, he wraps up the year with his year in review. And this year is no different. So here you go. So it takes up most of the Tropical Sunday section of the Miami Herald. 2020, Dave Barry's year in review, was a year of nonstop awfulness. So, you know, I've been filling in for Brad Friedman, and I thought I will read this, I'll record it, and then I'll use it throughout the week in bits and pieces. Well, I started reading it on Sunday, recording it, and once it's all edited and done, it goes over 40 minutes, but it's so good. So here's what I'm going to do. Tomorrow's show, the New Year's Eve show, will be my dramatic reading of Dave Barry's 2020 in review. And, you know, with some special features added in along the way, some music, some maybe song parodies, some applicable songs for the end of the year. So that's going to be tomorrow. Again, you can get it. You can listen live at 5 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network or at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live or at NicoleSandlerStream.com or on any of the other stations that carry the show. Verdant Square Radio, FYI Nation, Netroots Radio. We're on a number of stations. So however you usually listen to the, if you listen to the show live at 5 Eastern, you can still listen. We just won't be on video tomorrow. And then it'll be available as usual as a podcast. And then for Friday, one of the silver linings of this whole pandemic, for those of you who've been with me for a while, you might recall in like April and May, and I think into June, when we were locked down, I mean, we were, and we were all over the world, I started reaching out to people in other countries, knowing that for the first time, really, in history, as far as I know, it's certainly in my life, everybody in the world was experiencing the same thing, mostly March and April. And Dave Barry combines the 2 months and calls them Marpril or Mapril, Marpril. I don't know because it's not pronounced. It's just written. But anyway, during that time, no matter what country you're talking about, Spain, Italy, Australia, New Zealand, Finland, Denmark, Germany, Italy, I talked to people in every one of those countries, Kazakhstan. We were all quarantining at home. So I started this feature called Quarantine Calling, where I reached out across the world and I met some amazing people. So on Friday, the New Year's Day show, which I would like to be sort of positive and uplifting, will feature some of those quarantine calls because they were so special, I thought. So that's what we'll do for the rest of the week. So, yeah, I won't be here live, but I will be tomorrow. I guess I'll be putting these shows together. I'm sort of there, not quite there, but I have the thing read anyway. All right. Where are they now? Senators are being called to the floor to mark their attendance. Called a live quorum, allowing the Senate to conduct business.
Mr. Warner.
Oh, they're on the W's. So they're still taking roll. While we're waiting to find out what's happening here, let me also tell you, today, our guest, my last guest of the year, it's only fitting that I'll be joined by Digby. Heather Digby Parton is like one of the OG bloggers. Now, I'm not cool, so I had to look up what OG stood for because I don't know the lingo. But this was like a year or two ago, so I got it now. Original gangster is what OG stands for, and it basically means, in Digby's case, when the blogosphere started, she was one of the original progressive bloggers and has been at it ever since. So she is an OG progressive blogger. Digby blogs at digbysblog.net. That's Digby's hullabaloo, and also writes for salon.com. And I love talking to her. So, you know, we'll sort of look back on the insanity of the year and ahead to what promises to be a really insane first week of 2021. We'll get to it, I promise. Let me tell you, there was some breaking news just a short while ago. Well, a few things, sadly. Did I close that window? Oh, man. Sad news today. We all know somebody who's died of the COVID by now because it is everywhere. And, you know, too many people across the world have died, but so many Americans that it's criminal, I believe, on the part of this administration because they were so negligent in their response. Just everything they did was wrong. So, it's just horrible. Dawn Wells died today. And you might be going, Dawn Wells, that name sounds familiar. Marianne from Gilligan's Island. Marianne, the only one left from that 3-hour cruise or 3-hour tour, I think it was how the song went, is Ginger, Tina Louise. She's the only last stranded survivor standing. Anyway, Dawn Wells died of COVID at the age of 82. It's just not fair. And here's the other breaking news from today. I just want to see what they're doing. I don't want to miss the Senate. What? Yes? David's handing me a note. Original gangsta. Sorry, gangsta, not gangster. I know. I'm just not cool. Sorry. Gangsta. OG. Original gangsta. The other bit of breaking news from today. We know that Donald Trump has been inciting people, getting them riled up to come to Washington on January 6th, which is the day that there will be a joint session of Congress where it's usually just a formality. The president of the Senate, who happens to be the vice president, will preside over the joint session, will open the envelopes as they officially recognize the votes each state has cast, the electors, the electoral college in each state has cast, and they certify and accept the results. Well, Donald Trump is a big baby and a sore loser, and he just still won't accept it. So he's doing everything he can to try to get his sycophantic followers in Congress to throw, to overturn democracy for him, to overturn the will of the people to award him the election, even though he lost by over 7 million votes. And by the same margin in the Electoral College votes that he beat Hillary Clinton by 4 years ago when he called it a landslide. It's just so sickening. But that's the situation. And up until today, there was some question. We knew that there are a few House members who are saying they're going to object, right? Well, it takes a House member and a Senate member to both object, and then the two chambers of Congress split, and they each go and debate and vote and do what they need to do. Well, up until today, there was a rumor that Tommy Tuberville, the former college football coach, who the people of Alabama, for some inexplicable reason, elected to the U.S. Senate, really, that he said he was going to object, even though Mitch McConnell's like, I don't want you to do that, or I don't want everyone to have to go on the record.
All right. Quorum is now present.
Oh, they have a quorum now. All right, we'll hear what's going to happen in a minute. Anyway, Josh Hawley, the idiot senator from Missouri, who replaced Claire McCaskill, said he's going to challenge the results of a free and fair election. All right, let's hear what they're doing now.
Senate will come to order.
Senate will come to order. Okay. And?
Mr. President, I asked the chair to lay before the Senate the veto message. On
Mitch
H.R. 6395, and I ask for the yeas and nays.
Uh-oh.
Is there a sufficient second? There is. The clerk will call the roll.
Oh, God. All right.
Mr. Alexander.
See, this is what I don't understand. So they're calling the rolls to begin debate on the override of Trump's veto of the National Defense Authorization Act. What I don't understand is how any senator can block, can object to the motion to bring the vote for the $2,000 checks to the floor. And Mitch McConnell wasn't the only one who objected. Others did today when they started this session 2 hours ago. But they can't, the Democrats can't object to this vote taking place. That's what I don't understand. I guess we'll find out in a few minutes. So anyway, they are voting to open debate. This is a cloture vote to open debate on the override of the veto. This is going to go on for a while. We are not going to have an answer on this by the time I leave the air tonight. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for this, it is, you know, it's the end of 2020. I've got a few different, aside from the thing I'm going to play for you tomorrow, a few different fun bits to play. You know what? Before I do that, let me share this, because Bernie Sanders is not getting enough recognition. I mean, I thanked him profusely on the Twitters, and it looks like a lot of people are retweeting it and taking, you know, my lead, following my lead and thanking him as well. But he appeared last night on MSNBC with Ali Velshi, who was filling in for Rachel Maddow. And here's a little bit of their conversation from last night that explains where Bernie's at and what he's thinking right now. Here we go.
7 Republicans who have expressed the idea of supporting the increase. You need 12. Here's my issue. Those who don't support it, there's this real remarkable fear amongst Republicans and fiscal conservatives about anything that will run up the deficit just a little bit if you give it to working people. There was zero concern a couple of years ago when they did a tax cut that nobody really needed about running up the deficit in a way that we have never seen before. But God forbid you give money to working people or people who aren't working right now.
Ali, that's exactly right. And it's not only the huge tax breaks we gave to the wealthy. It's not only the fact that we have a tax code that allows large, profitable corporations like Amazon to pay virtually nothing in federal taxes. It's the hundreds of billions of dollars in corporate welfare that we provide. And just last week, we voted against my vote. I didn't vote for it. A $740 billion defense bill, which is more money on defense than the next 10 nations combined. There was almost no debate about the amount of money that is being spent on defense. And everybody knows an enormous amount of cost overruns and waste in that defense bill. So you're quite right. When it comes to helping desperate working people, oh, we can't afford it. When it comes to giving tax breaks for the rich or corporate welfare, no problem. That is an outrage, and that's what we're dealing with right this minute. It is very...
Oh, that was Bernie on with Ali Velshi last night, and that's what he's fighting for now. He is a hero, and it's depressing to me that he's not going to be our president. Because can you imagine? Can you imagine how much better things would be? Anyway, all right, they are voting on opening debate. We'll take a quick time out. I'm going to play for you one of the funny looks back. Looks back, I guess is correct, at the year, thankfully almost over. This from a new friend of the show. I just discovered him, as if I discovered him. I found his videos on YouTube, and he's brilliant. His name is Philip Markle, but on Twitter he goes by at Philip Sparkle. I'd make the Randy Rainbow comparison because of the names, and they're both obviously gay men and very talented, but that's where it ends. I guess it's, yeah, I don't even know why I threw that out there, because there is some kind of synergy, I suppose. But anyway, here is Philip Markle Sparkle's latest, and it's a look at the year almost gone by. By way of a commercial, sorta, kinda. Here we go.
Are you ready for this year to be over? Now? Now, that's what I call 2020 delivers you this year's chart-bottoming hits.
Oops, I bunkered again. I let out a fart and blamed a good friend. Oh, Jared, Jared. Oops, I just flashed my can.
Sorry.
At a hot dog man. I'm not that innocent.
And just in time for the holiday season, we're here to remind you that Melania hates Christmas.
Who gives a f*** about Christmas?
With How Melania Stole Christmas.
You're a mean one, Melania Trump. You're a hard salam of coal. Your coat is made of reindeer. Your husband is a troll, Melania Trump. You wouldn't let Donald touch you with his 3.5-inch pole.
And let's not forget the miracle on Pennsylvania Avenue that saved your leader from certain doom.
Regeneron, 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 Regeneron.
This album is 24 hours long and includes a New Year's Eve countdown by Rudy Giuliani and Kimberly Guilfoyle. Because, let's face it, this year needs to end. Now! But don't tune out after the clock strikes 12, because 2021 needs you to pivot to those two Georgia Senate races.
Whatever Stacey wants, voters, Stacey gets Starbucks gift cards, and Georgia peaches, Stacey Abrams wants you for round two.
And...
Move, Mitch, get out the way, get out the way, Mitch, get out the way.
Now that's what I call a Georgia runoff. To order now, that's what I call 2020. Send check or money order to John Ossoff and Reverend Raphael Warnick.
Do it now.
Ah.
Please.
Yes, please.
18 or older to vote.
And then he puts up the...
Move, Mitch. Get out
move,
the
Mitch.
Way. Get out the way, Mitch. Get out the way.
I love that at the end of it, you know, he puts up Stacey Abrams' Fair Fight URL and asks you to give money to Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff because it is imperative that on Tuesday they win. Because this is all, everything that's going on now, the fact that everybody, you know, they've got the votes to pass $2,000 relief checks to us. And yes, it would be a relief and it would be stimulus because we'd spend the money. The only person holding it back is Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, by the way, is not even in the Constitution. You know what is? Senate President. And I'm only throwing that out there because come January 20th, Kamala Harris will be the Senate president. She'll be the vice president, who is the Senate president. But, you know, if we please could get John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock to win those two Senate races in Georgia this coming Tuesday, Election Day, then Mitch McConnell will no longer be Senate Majority Leader. He will not have the power to say, nope, no bill for you, no vote for you, no vote for you, no vote for you, because that's what he's doing now. The House passed the bill. The president wants it. They've got more than enough votes. Mitch McConnell alone is standing in the way and saying, nope, I will not bring it up for a vote. In fact, you know, twice again today, as it happened yesterday, he said, I object. Ugh. Well, we can fix that on Tuesday. Georgia, are you listening? Please fix it on Tuesday. By the way, there's one other news item that broke last night. And can't say that I was surprised. I feel badly for this man's family. But yesterday, the United States recorded 3,725 deaths due to the coronavirus. One of those 3,725 Americans, human beings, who died in the United States yesterday from the coronavirus, from COVID-19, was the 41-year-old, otherwise healthy man with no underlying medical conditions, who tested positive on December 18th. So what is that, 12 days ago? He was hospitalized in Louisiana the next day and tweeted on December 21st that he was thankful for the continued outpouring of prayers and support and that he was confident that with the help of doctors, he would be, quote, on the mend soon. He was soon after that transferred to the intensive care unit after his condition worsened. The man's name is Luke Letlow. And that probably doesn't mean anything to you unless you happen to live in Louisiana's 5th Congressional District, because Luke Letlow was their congressman-elect. He had just won that congressional seat in November and was going to be sworn in along with the rest of the new Congress this coming Sunday. Yes, the 116th Congress officially ends on Saturday. On Sunday, the new Congress is sworn in. We will be down one new member by the name of Luke Letlow, who was supposed to be the incoming freshman congressman from Louisiana's 5th Congressional District, who instead died from COVID-19. By the way, if you were wondering, Mr. Letlow, or... oh, shoot. Do I not have the clip up here? Hold on one second. Let me find it for you because it is stunning. Because Mr. Letlow was your typical Republican Neanderthal who... Why don't I see it here? Here it is. Okay. This was actually from October when he said this. And it... It's just classic. Here, Luke Letlow speaking on October 8th. Obviously, he was in the midst of campaigning for his, you know, congressional seat that he won, saying that it's hard to hear. So I'm going to just give you the gist and then I'll play it for you. Basically, we're in grave danger if we don't reopen the economy soon.
While we've been cautious, and I think both at the state and federal level, I think we've taken numerous precautions with COVID-19. We are now in a place where if we do not open our economy, we're in real danger.
We're now in a place where if we do not open our economy, we're in real danger. Luke, I'd say you're in real danger now. Actually, you're past danger. You left behind two small children and a wife. Luke Letlow was known for not wearing a mask ever and for holding a lot of indoor campaign events, not wearing a mask, just in case you were wondering. All right. So they are voting.
Mrs. Feinstein.
They're doing the vote now to begin debate. Right now it stands at 64 yes, 9 no. So I'm guessing there's not going to be a filibuster. I'm confused. I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to get Digby on the line because maybe she knows more about how all this stuff works than I do. And well, it's time because Digby is our guest today. So let me do this. Let me play this. Well, let me call her first. She's going to be on the regular phone because we're doing, you know, old fashioned way. I think this is the right number. Well, Digby's got her own intro, doesn't she? Here we go.
What's that, Leonardo?
Oh, you know what? I have Digby's intro here.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. Digby. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Yeah, she is Heather Digby Parton. She is an OG. Oh, did I lose? Uh-oh. I had her, I thought. Okay, and the line just went dead. Maybe I need to call the other number. Let me try this one. I thought she was there on the line. You know, go figure. I've got two numbers for her, so I'm not sure which one is the right one. One is obviously a cell phone. One is a house phone. You know, can't make it through the last show of the year without screwing something up. One ringy dingy. All right, so we're calling Digby. I may have to call back the other number. Hello?
Hello?
Digby? Hello?
Hello?
Hey, it's Nicole. Am I calling on the wrong number?
This is my cell phone. I mean, it's fine if that's what you want to use, but...
You know what? Let me call on the other line, because I bet it'll be a better connection.
Okay.
All right, I'll call you right back. Bye.
All right, bye.
It's live radio. You know, look, it wouldn't be the last show of the year if I didn't screw something up, right? So, again, we're calling Digby again. The Senate is voting on whether or not
Hello.
To begin debate. Hey, Digby. So,
it is.
Yes. Hey. So I'm watching. Let me ask you, do you understand this? Mitch McConnell was able to stop the Democrats' call for a vote on the Cash Act, the bill for $2,000 checks, by saying, I object. Could not any of the Democrats have objected to Mitch McConnell calling for a vote to begin to open debate on the overriding of the veto of the NDAA?
I wondered the same thing, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, these are very arcane, you know, Senate rules
yeah.
that allow certain things, and that is one that I didn't understand. And, in fact, we're watching a whole lot of that kind of stuff right now because, as you pointed out earlier, we're getting to the end of the session, and things are getting very, you know, dicey.
Yes. And then today, it seems like the closer we get, today we are 3 weeks out from, let me just pull up the calendar to make sure I'm not screwing something up. 3 weeks out from Inauguration Day. And I think with each passing hour, Donald Trump is getting more and more insane and pulling out all the stops. And now we're hearing, today we learned that they do have a senator who will object, and Josh Hawley. We thought it was going to be the Tommy Tuberville football guy who may still do it. But Josh Hawley will be the stooge who, puts his reputation, but what kind of reputation does he have? His career on the line for Donald Trump to perpetuate this scheme to overthrow democracy, to overthrow the will of the people in a legitimate vote in the United States of America. It's astounding, isn't it?
I think so, and I think a lot of people are pretty shocked that they're actually going to do that. And I'm telling you, it is not beyond the realm of possibility that every Republican will vote with him. Now, we are assuming that they won't, right, that it'll just be a handful of outliers, Ted Cruz and Hawley, maybe, and Tuberville, Tom Cotton, you know, mm-hmm. a few of those guys.
The usual suspects.
They're looking to consolidate the Trump cult in, you know, as the base for their further ambitions. But I don't think it's beyond the Mitch McConnell made it very clear. One of the things Mitch does is that he tells you what he's thinking a good part of the time. And he said, and he knew it was going to get out, that he didn't want this vote to happen because it was going to put senators in a very bad position going into 2022. They're going to use that vote against them. So, but now I'm thinking that it'll be one of those things, let's all hold hands. And do this, and now they still won't be able to overturn the election, right? Because the House has to agree, and they're not going to do that. But this is getting very, very dangerous, crazy, lunacy stuff now. If the entire Republic—and look, I didn't expect there'd be 126 people would sign on to that stupid Supreme Court case either.
Right.
So— anything can happen.
Right. And I just saw somebody who was responding to you on Twitter at Digby56 talking about they're now hearing that there could be well over 100 members of the House who back up the, you know, it was Mo yep. Brooks who's spearheading this thing. But they could have. Look, they had 126 who, as you mentioned, signed on to that Supreme Court yep. case that was nonsense. This thing is nuts. These people, I mean, I would think they should be guilty of sedition. They could all be charged. And Nancy Pelosi should probably not seat any of them.
Well, it's to the point where you really have to wonder if that's not, if the Democrats don't have to take some radical action here. I know they're very reluctant to do it. They don't want to play into the radicalism and blah, blah, blah. But this is getting really nuts. I mean, what's happened here? And, you know, it's beyond just, you know, kind of just political theater, right, which is what I think people are still assuming this is. What's happening is that they are, by doing this, I don't care if it's a handful of senators or all of them or a handful of House members or 100, you know, and 10 of them, however many. If they do this, what they're doing is setting up a big lie that is so huge that I honestly think it could be spelling the end of our system because here's the thing about the big lie, right? It's much more potent if the big lie has no evidence. And you can't, you know, that, and it'd be one thing if this was a super close election and it was like 2000, right?
Right,
and there was a 500 vote difference. This is, there's nothing, this is completely without any evidence. It's been run through the courts. There have been all these officials. There have been everything. And yet it's working. And these guys are actually, guys and gals, are actually backing this up. And we are going to be in a position now where I think, you know, the Republican Party is going to take the position that this election was stolen. And that is going to become their reality, even people who know for a fact that it's not true. This is dangerous, you know, and what are we going to do about this?
I don't know.
I don't even know.
Right. And here, you know, today, Georgia once again certified their vote. So Biden won in Georgia yet again. And they were saying, look, this time the Trump people were challenging the signature matches on the ballots. And they said, we counted them all. There was no fraud here. There was no fraud here. There's no there. And so what does Trump do? He attacks the very Republican governor of Georgia, the very Republican secretary of state. Now he makes up a thing, I guess, because he heard Dick Morris say it on Fox, that Rappensperger, or whatever his name is, the secretary of state, who is a Republican, by the way, and a Trump supporter, or at least he has been, that his brother works for the Chinese. He doesn't have a brother. Trump went on this whole tirade about the Georgia Secretary of State brother who works for the Chinese government. And there might be a guy with that name, but he's not related to Georgia's Secretary of State. Donald Trump lies. He makes stuff up. And all these people are like lemmings just following along.
Well, they're seeing the benefit of it, Nicole. I mean, and this has been true for the entire time Trump's been in office. If we've seen nothing else, I mean, Trump is Trump. We know what we're dealing with him, right? I mean, he's got serious psychological issues. He's completely incompetent. He is ignorant. You know, I mean, we know we can use every one of those adjectives mm-hmm. to describe him. But what is more interesting at the moment now is the Republican Party and how they have decided. And when we're seeing this Josh Hawley thing, Josh Hawley gave a rationale that said, I'm going to do this because all these people, we need to do this because so many people are concerned that the election was stolen, that there were election irregularities. And we know that the only reason people are believing that is because they're being lied to by Donald Trump and the right-wing media. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling, you know, sort of feedback loop here. And they've discovered that that really works with their people. And that is what is freaking, I think it's starting to freak people out that this has taken on a life of its own and it's no longer attached to Donald Trump.
Right.
This is now part and parcel of the Republican Party's approach to politics. And you're seeing the Young Turks, the Josh Hawleys and the Tom Cottons coming up and seeing how this works. And now they're starting to strategize how they can use it for their benefit, even when Trump is not there. So, I mean, this is now a new political world that exists outside of Trump, and that's really scary. I had not anticipated that, to be honest with
you. No, nor had I, Digby, and this is what's so frightening. Because, honestly, look, the Democratic Party has its own problems. This party is so fucked up. It just beyond. I mean, just watching leadership stumble its way through everything. If we had competent, and I'm not an ageist. People who know me know. I still think Bernie Sanders would have made a great president. And watching him in action this week, I'm really, you know, I have a bit of melancholy of what could be. That said, the leadership in the House needs to go, and the leadership in the Senate needs to go. First of all, it's about 20 years older than their Republican counterparts. The average age of the House leadership is something like 72. You got Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn, who are all, you know, I'm sorry, it's not the chronological age, it's their mindset. And they're old farts, and they don't know how to move along in the 21st century. They're not capable of dealing with these crooked politicians on the right and beating them at their game. They're just from a different world. And if the Democrats don't get with the program and, you know, come into the 21st century, I think they're going to be irrelevant. And then you got the Republicans who have given up. They've all turned to Trumpism, or they've decided they've left the party and that they'll now be Democrats. That's my biggest fear, is that, you know, it's the MSNBCization of the Democratic Party, where it's the party of the never Trumpers. And we progressives are out in the cold.
Well, I don't actually worry about that, Nicole.
No?
I mean, I don't have that as a fear, and not because I think that they're so great or anything, but just because I think the Democratic Party showed in this last election with 80 million votes that it's a big tent. And so there's going to be, whenever you have that kind of broad-based coalition, you're going to have that kind of, you know, stress points and sort of fissures within the coalition. I am much more optimistic about the progressive side of the Democratic Party than I've been in a very long time. And that's not to say that I don't share your concerns about the leadership for all the same reasons you state. And also just for the fact that I think that, you know, we are dealing, if you look at the Republicans, what's coming up on their side is this new group, right? I mean, this is the same people I've been talking about, the Josh Hawleys, the people like that. It's not the old guard. This is a new guard, and they are seeing things They're seeing politics through the Trumpist lens. And on the Democratic side, it's exactly as you say. There's still sort of, and there's this instinct and this, well, there's an incentive in many ways, also pushed by the media to, you know, we just want to go back to normal. And I think there's a lot of that even within the populace, sort of, you know, can we just go back to normal where I'm not, you know, freaking out about politics every day. But the fact is that we've had a big shift, and the downside is what we've been talking about. The upside is that there is a new progressive faction, strong, large, and young in the Democratic Party, and I think they are pretty savvy, and I feel a lot more confident about how they're that. And the reason I say that isn't, it has nothing to do with ideology. You could be a centrist or mainstream liberal or progressive or whatever. What we're talking about here is political strategy. How do we get what we want? And most people in the coalition, you know, there's going to be arguments over taxes. There's going to be arguments over stuff like Medicare for all versus, you know, the public option and the sort of normal tug of war within the party. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a more or less a broad agreement on most policy. And what isn't a broad agreement is on strategy and tactics. And that's where I think the progressives have it all over everybody else in the party. And I think they're going to be in a position to prove it. I think we're going to see them stepping up and showing the way on how you do politics in this new environment. At least I get that sense. I mean, from what I see in social media and what I read from these folks and how savvy they are about all this, I just feel... I feel optimistic about that side. Maybe I sound like a Pollyanna.
No, but, I'm glad to hear it.
I just feel pretty good about that.
Good, because we need that optimism. Because frankly,
we desperately do.
I'm scared shitless about what's going to happen next week. Okay, again, there was something that I had heard that if this comes to pass and they go to their various chambers, that it's not one person, one vote. It's one vote per delegation. Is that true?
Yeah. It's what I understand it to be.
And so
it's insane. I mean, that is, you know, look, Nicole, we've got some structural issues here that are so out of whack. And by the way, have been since, you know, 1889.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just that we haven't had people crude enough to be willing to exploit them all until now.
Right.
But, yeah, that's my understanding. And, you know, I mean, there are, I think that most people believe that the House will be able to stop this. There's some procedural aspects that they can be able to do. It. And of course, there is some thought among Republicans, certainly among Republican leadership, that, you know, you don't even want to think about what would happen in this country if they were to. I mean, it would be a coup,
yes.
A, you know, quasi-constitutional coup, and we would find ourselves in the greatest constitutional crisis since the Civil War, maybe even beyond that. And I don't think that the Republicans really want that. What they want is to put on a show here to, you know, show themselves to be, you know, the radical revolutionaries that the Trump people want. But, I don't know that most Republicans really want to overthrow the government.
And that's what it would be.
I could be wrong. I have been right. wrong about them before. So,
but this could be with 2020. Maybe Nostradamus got the dates wrong. The end of this experiment in democracy. You know, they say we're the oldest democracy in the world. We're only 237 years? My math is horrible. Don't ask me. But, you know, we're still a relatively young country as compared to the rest of the world. But this system of government may not work, may not hold on. It's astounding. Just thinking about it is kind of making my head explode.
I know. It's not good.
And it's all based on lies. You know, you look at, there was, you know, shenanigans with the vote in Georgia. A judge just, I think yesterday, said something like 40,000 votes, if I'm remembering correctly, needed to be reinstated, that were purged from the voting, from the voter polls, from the voter lists, and had to be reinstated. They are actively trying to keep people who are Democrats from voting. That's a problem. But Republicans don't recognize that because it doesn't affect them adversely.
Well, that's absolutely true. And as you know, that's been going on for a very long time. That has been their go-to. I mean, they have grasped that they can only win now through these vote suppression tactics, through a minoritarian sort of strategy, where they can use the Constitution and use the, you know, things like gerrymandering, use things like the Electoral College, use things like these sorts of voter purges and what have you in states run by Republicans, that they can eke out victories by doing that. And the problem is that what this current thing, and I honestly think this is really at the heart of what's going on with Josh Hawley and this move to protest to contest the vote in the Congress, aside from, you know, kissing Trump, licking Trump's boots, which is part of it.
Yeah.
But the, one of the real reasons here is they want to establish some kind of narrative that will allow them to restrict voting in the places where they can restrict it on the basis of this alleged stolen election. This is going to result, if they have their way, in a restriction of vote. You know, we've had all this early voting. We have drop boxes. We had mail-in voting. We had a lot of things that really expanded voting, the ability of people to vote, not just in this election, but in years in the past, too. And, in fact, Republicans in the past have been, you know, proponents of mail-in voting. This election showed them that that is no longer working for them. And so they are going to use this as an excuse to go in, and maybe even on a federal level if they could get away with it. Luckily, we have a Democrat in the White House who won't sign that. Mm-hmm. But this is their plan, I think. And I think this is at the heart of what they're really trying to do, which is restrict voting, you know, just in all these places, places like Arizona, but that are, you know, the up-and-coming potential purple-blue state, you know, transitional states that made a difference in this last election. They're going to try and change that through these voting restrictions. And I think they're going to be very draconian about it because the election was stolen from their man, Donald Trump, and they're going to use that as this sort of impetus for really going after voting rights. And, it, you know, I mean, luckily there'll be a Democratic Department of Justice, which mm-hmm. can go in, look at this stuff for a change. But nonetheless, you know, I mean, it's one step forward, two steps back with this in this country. And it's exhausting, the amount, the endless assault that's been going on voting rights since, you know, the Civil War, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just been an endless battle to allow
it's amazing.
People to vote.
And, but, you know, the thing that's so weird is that argument doesn't really hold up because 74 million people came out and voted for Donald Trump. And,
I know.
Right. Which is just insane. This country, I knew that we had a lot of mentally challenged people here. Let me put it that way. But to this extent, I'm just mortified. I'm mortified.
Well, Nicole, they vote. All of those people voted for Donald Trump. I mean, do you need to know anything else?
No.
I mean, to me, that says it all. That's a dividing line for me now. You know, did you vote for Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to understand nothing more about you.
Exactly.
Because that is a separation of people who live in the real world from people who don't. And, you know, and again, you know, we haven't even talked about the true toxic swill of right-wing media, which you and I have been talking about for many years. And that is another aspect of this. I mean, my one hope is that somehow or another Fox News is bifurcating or at least separating into various entities that will compete with one another and not have the monolithic power that they have had over the past few years. Maybe Trump has done us a favor with that. I don't know.
We'll see. We had the Wall Street Journal publish a very pointed editorial yesterday telling Trump, stop it already. You lost. Go home. And then today also calling him out, saying this $2,000 check, you just gave Chuck Schumer a $2,000 check to win the Senate. I wish that were the case. But, you know, they're still defending the Republican ideology, but going after Trump, which is a big sea change. By the way, David just corrected me. It was 4,000 voters who were re-added to the polls in Georgia. Not a big enough number to make a difference, but showing that's where the problem is.
Yes, absolutely. That is where the problem is, and it's one of the things that has been, you know, I mean, the lift that it takes for somebody, groups like Stacey Abrams down there in Georgia and other groups that have been working with her, to just allow, you know, legitimate voters to vote. I mean, we're not talking about turnout or enthusiasm or getting good candidates or any of the other normal political stuff that is always a challenge, right? I mean, that's just politics. But the idea that they are constantly trying to stop them from exercising the franchise. And this has been going on forever, and they always find new ways to do it. And it's huge. And we just, you know, one of the things that really, there's no, Antonin Scalia said this in the Bush versus Gore. He made a point of this. There's no constitutional right to vote there's no right to vote in the Constitution. Maybe there should be.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe that's something that we should be working on.
I think the Constitution is due for a good updating. The problem is their side wants to update it in the wrong direction. They're talking about secession. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about this. You know, I mean, this is one of those things where you just reach a point where you're having these people, this minority rule.
Yeah.
And all the places where people live, you know, are going, wait a minute. You know, this is just wrong. And I mean, it's wrong on an economic basis. It's wrong on any kind of a moral basis. And in politically, it's just undemocratic, and our system is undemocratic. This electoral look, if we didn't
horrible.
Have the electoral college,
yes.
You know, we wouldn't. I mean, this would be a completely different story. I mean, Trump could be out there shouting into the void that, you know, all 7 million votes were illegal immigrants or something.
Right.
But that is a much harder sort of case to make. The idea that we even have to think about this stupid electoral college, and frankly, and I say this and people go, oh my God, you're so radical, but I'm for eliminating the Senate. I don't see why we
Me
have
too.
It. I don't, the you know,
fact,
forget it.
The fact that Wyoming or South Dakota or Rhode Island has the same representation as California and New York and Texas is insane. I'm sorry. That's not democratic. That and it wasn't set up to be that way. So abolish the Senate. I'm right there with you. We need massive change.
But move to a more parliamentary style system. You know, look, there's a reason why. I mean, can you count any countries in the whole world in this great democratization that took place over the last century? Anybody take our system up?
No.
I mean, they didn't.
No.
They looked at our Constitution.
No.
Whoa.
Right.
That makes no sense.
And it's
so,
not to
know,
say.
Our brilliant founders had a lot of great ideas. The Bill of Rights is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think it's one of the greatest documents, that, you know, for human evolution that, you know, society that we've ever had. But our system of government, a little creaky, a little too many compromises, a little, you know, had the slave states, you know. All of it.
Yep. And
not
the two-party system, by the way, is not in the Constitution, doesn't work.
No.
You know, it's what we're stuck with now, because anybody coming up in a third party is going to have no chance of unseating either of the two major parties the way things are structured now. That's why we need massive change. And who knows, maybe, I hate to say, next Wednesday might be the day that everything falls apart. I mean, not only are these members of Congress, you know, ready to blow up our democracy, but Donald Trump is calling all his minions to come to Washington for a wild time. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. And that is going to be, well, I think we've got a big day coming up on January 6th. And, of course, a lot of it depends on what happens on January 5th.
That's right.
You know, in Georgia. And so this whole thing is just nuts. And it's this endless election. I mean, Donald Trump's been running for re-election from the day he was inaugurated.
Yeah.
And I mean, literally, he filed for re-election
that day on inauguration day. Yes.
Yeah, rallies and everything it's just been this endless campaign, and it's still not over.
No, and I read today that the Trump campaign filed again with the Supreme Court asking them to overturn the Wisconsin votes. And my first thought was the Trump campaign, the election's been over for 8 weeks already. He lost. Move on.
Well, I mean, at some point, and they, you know, look, the courts have actually been pretty sane in this whole process.
So far.
You know, they're quite sane so far. I mean, and yet, you know, they were poised. And let's not forget this. They were poised to step in, particularly in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin. Those two states, they were ready to step in. And all the, what happened was is that the election just wasn't close enough, and they could see that, that even if they got involved in those two states, that it wouldn't be enough to overturn from the other states.
Right.
But they were ready to do it, and they had some big, big, heavy-hitting lawyers involved at that point. It wasn't Sidney Powell and, you know, Lynn Wood
and
in those days, or
Giuliani.
Even Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
They had Jones Day, and they had some big law firms that were ready to go.
Until they all pulled out because they realized it was a scam.
Yeah, and they realized that it was impossible. They couldn't, you know, there just wasn't, they weren't ready to just completely, you know, defy reality and pretend like some, you know, like they didn't need any evidence. But if they could have, if it had been close enough, they were ready to go in and fight on the basis of the idea that, that only the legislatures have the right to change election law. And again, that's another vote suppression tactic, right?
Right.
Because they want to be able to you know, hamstring the secretaries of state and the courts, the state courts.
Yep. We're at the top of the hour.
Voting.
Say goodbye to Progressive Voices Network. Bye, Progressive Voices Network. And we can run over for a minute just so I can actually, we can say goodbye. We could keep going for 2 hours, and we're going to have to pick this up in the new year. Hopefully we will still have a republic or what passes for it these days. Everything is up in the air. We can be thankful that 2020 is almost over. Thank God. But I have to wonder what kind of a hangover we're going to have in 2021.
It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad, and I think we all just have to gird ourselves, have a nice weekend, enjoy the moment, and then get ready, because this what they're signaling with this, with all this stuff that's happening here around the election, is that they are going completely over the cliff. So it's not going to be let's all work together for the sake of the country. Let's just
accept
that and move on.
Right. No, this is a divided nation, if there ever was one.
Yep.
The Senate has moved into debating the defense bill veto override. So that they're going to be at this for hours. So that's that. I guess Bernie's not filibustering. I wish I understood more of how it worked. I was hoping for something. But you know what? The rest of the caucus didn't have his back on this.
Hmm.
So
but he could have done it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but I think there's a timing issue, and I don't understand it, but there's a timing issue of when the filibuster, whether there would have been time to do all this with the filibuster before the Congress expires.
Right. And it expires on Saturday. Saturday it ends. Sunday the new Congress is sworn in. And we'll be back here Monday. Digby, thank you so much for being my last guest of the year. And we'll reconvene early in 2021 to try to make sense of what's happening. Thank you. Happy New Year. Thank you for all you do. And
you too. It's right back at you.
All
right. Have a great New Year. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. And you, don't forget, I will not be here live tomorrow, but I've got two great shows for you tomorrow and Friday. So they're audio only. You can listen live at 5 or come back for the podcast. That'll be posted at NicoleSandler.com. And you know, I'm not behind a paywall. So enjoy it and share freely. Happy New Year, everyone. May 2021 be better than 2020 was. And that's not saying much. Good luck to us all. See you next week, but I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay? Bye.